as a radio news researcher, and then she also joined the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Well, she's someone with a lot of newness and creativity, and after coming to Baba, she has served in various countries, of course in London and UK, but also in Germany, Canada, and I know for a period of time, she had been in India, especially a set of books. I do not know whether all of you have that or not, but I do have that set of books on meditation and spirituality. So she was doing that, writing those books and producing those programs and courses. And now, I think she's in Godlywood Studio. Am I right? And she's doing programs, producing programs for the Raj Yoga TV channels, Raj Yoga TV channel, and this can be viewed on Peace of Mind channel, YouTube, no? Oh, RajaYoga.tv. So she's producing programs for that in Godlywood Studio. And are you based in Madhuban now or traveling? She's all over the world. So she is a world server. So let's warmly welcome Sister Denise again. And she's going to share with us Bab Dada's hope on us. When we gave her the topic, actually we didn't give her, she chose that topic. Then we said that, well, this is nothing new. But she said that, yes, we do know Bab Dada's hope in us, but have we fulfilled Bab Dada's hopes? Are we on the way of fulfilling Bab Dada's hopes? So let us listen to Sister Denise on this very interesting topic. Thank you.
Om Shanti. Well, the thing that is very subtle is our relationship with Baba. And when you have a relationship with someone, there's usually a problem of expectations. Is that right? And then the relationship goes bad because of the unfulfilled expectations, or maybe the expectations are too high. So I feel one of our problems is that we anthropomorphize God. That's a very new word for you, I'm sure, but it's a really good word, anthropomorphization of God. It means that you make God into a human being. And so, you know, we know that Baba is someone, and we know that Baba is a soul, but he's not a human soul. Shri Baba. Brahma Baba is a human soul. And he did fulfill Shri Baba's expectations. And I think the key for us to understand about fulfilling Baba's hopes is to see how Brahma Baba fulfilled Shri Baba's hopes. And of course, you know, when anybody gets married, they always have quarrels, right? So Shri Baba and Brahma Baba used to have some small quarrels, but mostly they were quite harmonious with each other. But whatever Shri Baba asked Brahma Baba to do was always far beyond impossible. But he's not a human soul. He's different. He is, you know, not someone that people can invent. You know, sometimes people think, you know, the atheists, they say God is a human invention. It's more like the other way around, you know, humans are a godly invention. But not even that, you know. He knows us. He loves us. And he says, you have each other, but I only have you. So there are certain little statements that he gives whereby you can really get how he feels about us human souls. And I'm a little bit insisting on Sheikh Baba not being a human soul, because you know he really is a non-human. He doesn't act like humans. He doesn't have the need to hide his feelings, or he doesn't get upset with people. You know, the anthropomorphization of God means that people infer that God will get angry about this or upset about that, or he'll, you know, boil you in oil and throw you into hell and all the kinds of things that you hear about God, which are inferred by people making God into a human. And he's really not. He doesn't have a body. He perceives us when he's looking through the eyes of Baba, Brahma Baba. Otherwise, he knows us with his mind. And he knows us independently of what we do. Human beings respond to what other people do, but he's not human. And he knows us before we ever did anything. And he knows the whole process of our decline from the Golden Age all the way through to the Iron Age. And he has taught us about the Confluence Age. So I think one of his hopes is that we should keep ourselves in the Confluence Age. And the Confluence Age is superimposed on the Iron Age. So whenever we're soul conscious, we're in the Confluence Age. And when we become body conscious, then we drop down into the Iron Age. When we're in the Confluence Age, we're rising. And when we're in the Iron Age, we're declining. And so our pathway in the road of Gyan is very much of an up and down thing, because we are not able to remain soul conscious all the time. And as we go further and further in Gyan, our idea of what soul consciousness is going to change and get refined, and our sense of what's real and what's important also changes. There are many things that we import from the Iron Age, and I think one of Baba's hopes is that we will stop needing to do that. And we should really import things from himself, and import things or devise and develop things which are confluence aged. And all of these things become what we call Brahmin culture. Nobody really knows exactly what Brahmin culture is, but one day Baba introduced the idea and everybody said, oh, do we have Brahmin culture? Yes, we do. What is it? Well, we don't really know, but we have it. And we're working on it. You know. I mean, one of the things that Baba wants us to do, which he always tells us, is to follow Srimat. And Srimat is in a way very simple, because it's just basically to consider yourself a soul and to remember Sheep Baba and spin the cycle and apply yourself to the different exams that come up bearing in mind the three aspects of time, bearing in mind the philosophy of karma, so that we create enough fortune to last us for 5,000 years, living at a level which is, you know, golden aged. We have 42 births in golden, silver and copper age, which is half of our births in 3/4 of time. And then 1/4 of time for the last half of our births. So he really wants us to see ourselves the way he sees us. And of course, he is the teacher. And he's looking at us in terms of who we were, who we are, who we're becoming. But he's also looking at the way in which we understand jnana at the present, and the way in which we apply it, the way we think about it. So one of the things I've been working on for quite a long time is separating out Srimat and Paramat and Manmat. And this is something that Dadi Jenghi used to talk to us about a great deal in earlier years. And there are many things that we import into BK life thinking that they're good because the rest of the world thinks they're good. But if you compare those things with the distinctions that Baba makes between Srimat, Paramat and Manmat, then we see that there are many things that are Paramat which we import, but which are not Srimad. And the way that it occurs is that it allows us to remain arrogant, sort of unnecessarily. And so I think one of Baba's hopes for us is that our third eye should be so focused, so clear, that we can actually see when we're doing something in the name of Srimat, but which is really Paramat. So how do I distinguish between Srimat and Paramat for this purpose? The thing with most people's ideas about what's good and bad is it comes from traditions that have been in existence only during the Iron Age, only during the last 1,000 years or so. And all of these things were created by the elite leaders of any given society during those days. They became handed down as traditions. Very often they're called ancient traditions. And 1,000 years is quite ancient, but it's not ancient enough for us. Because for us, ancient means 5,000 years. And the people who created the ancient traditions 1,000 years ago, they were not even there 5,000 years ago. But we were there. And we know we were there because we're here now. I see. And we are the people who subscribe to this idea of the knowledge of drama and the identically repeating cycle. And sometimes Baba has said to us, you are the ancestors. And of course we have the beautiful picture of the ancestors of the Yajna. my daddies and dadas, the original founding members, and these are the ones who formulated the traditions of the Brahmin world, along with Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba, in the context of the period of time before the Second World War, which was a very, very different mindset from what we have now. You probably, not many people in this room lived earlier than 1936, right? Anybody? No. You see. So the world has changed. And in many ways, the confluence age has evolved as well. And I think that the kind of imports that we bring in at this time are a bit different from the kind of imports that were brought in those days. And maybe not all of us think about what we import and why we import it. And do we have criteria to evaluate what we think should be included in the Brahmin world? Baba, Shiv Baba, never does anything without his children. That means that it's very participatory. You know, in most of the religions, they don't really describe the process of creation as participatory in any way. Just God created Adam like that, and then took out a rib and made Eve like that. And then there was a snake and an apple, and the whole drama happened that way. But it's very, very different to what really happens. You know, Shiv Baba says, I'm a resource for you. Use me. And I think this is one of the hopes he has for us, that we would be able to understand and discern and distinguish and discriminate how to use him. And what blocks us, what gets in the way of that, is our anthropomorphization of Shiv Baba. We make him into a human, and then we infer attitudes and behaviors that are absolutely not there. And so I think he wants us to be able to set aside all of these filters so that we can actually see him as he really is. And there are some muralis in which he says, very, very few people know me as I am and what I am. So this is one of the things he wants from us. Know me as I am and what I am. So first of all, he's not a human. And not only that, he's higher than a human. It's very, very difficult for a human to appreciate and conceive of something which is higher. Because you can only appreciate and conceive of something that's lower. You know. So to be able to experience Baba as he is, we have to put aside all of our preconceptions and be absolutely open. One of the things I noticed is when you read material written by a human, it tends to drain your energy. Do you find that? Yeah, reading is tedious. But when you read material, murli, which is given by Shiv Baba, of course it's hard work to really churn the murli. Definitely it's hard work. Because you have to wrap your mind around it. But when you do, you find it really, really energizes you, because the words that carry the ideas, the concepts, the Srimat, they go into our intellect, into our mind, into our sanskaras, and they alter us. I see. So I think one of the things that he wants us to do is to open ourselves sufficiently to allow that to happen. And when you have someone who's higher than a human instructing you as a human to become a deity, which is higher than a human, it's very much not under your control. Because the only thing that's under your control is how to manage being yourself as an Iron Age person who's spiritually depleted. You know how to manage that. But to allow yourself to be molded and worked on and shaped and shifted by the energy of Sri Baba's mind and the example of Brahma Baba's life, that is really something absolutely different, to which we have to surrender. And in the Gita, it talks about three kinds of people. And one kind of person, of course, it says that what God likes is the jnani souls. But in the Gita, it says there's very, very few souls who are really able to catch what he's saying and appreciate who he is and what he is. Very small number. Then there's a larger number of people who hear about it and they say, yeah, you know, this is good stuff. This is really good, you know, but they don't get it. They know it's good, but they don't get it. So they can't become the embodiment of it, but they can speak about it. And then there's the third group who just doesn't get it at all, just doesn't understand it when it's told to them. So I think that since we are Baba's students, we need to consider ourselves to be in that very, very little group of people who, the way Baba puts it, who recognize him. We recognize him and we say, yes, you are the one, and you have given us birth through the mouth of Brahma. And this is why we call ourselves Brahma Kumaras and Brahma Kumaris. We are Brahmins. And because of that, and also because of our dharana. So in terms of the relationship between ourselves and Baba, as the teacher, Baba wants us to study and repeating the Murli in the sense of just learning some points by heart is good, but it doesn't really take us so deep. He wants us to be able to process the ideas. And for that we have to contemplate and cogitate and really think about it until we can feel it, feel the meaning of what he's saying. And when we work with the Murli in that way, which is quite an intuitive way to do it, then the Murli becomes part of our blood, you know, and we can gradually become, through this process, the embodiment of what he is saying, so that ultimately we wouldn't need to speak anymore. I think recently Baba has been saying, serve with your face and serve with your character. So that means that all we need to do is walk into a room and it should light up. and people would observe us and say, these are the children of God, you see. And we know they are because we can feel it. So I think that Baba does want us to go beyond words. And you know that in Bab Dada's many muralis of the last season, Baba was also really taking us beyond words to this sense, you know, how extraordinary it is that he's the one and we are the ones who know the one, you know. And that is totally extraordinary, but then we don't always feel it. We don't always have the intoxication of it, which means we have moved away from the confluence age and dropped down onto the Iron Age. And I think when we drop down onto the Iron Age, we may engage in our spiritual practice in a routine manner, where you don't really see much difference between doing this and doing the different rituals of the path of devotion. And the devotees are, by definition, you know, spiritually body conscious. And we have to be spiritually soul conscious. I know in one place I went recently, I was telling people, well, you know, you're a peaceful soul, you might be a disturbed peaceful soul right now, but you're still, you know, fundamentally a peaceful soul. So we need to really work with the contrast and the paradox of the original stage, which Baba describes for us and which he asks us to practice that original stage, even though you are not at that point, but practice it because that's how you reach that point. And Baba had also spoken in earlier years of the importance of doing this for a long period of time. So I think one of the things that he does expect us to do is the disciplines. Because Raja Yoga practice is a discipline. It's a discipline of the mind, it's a discipline of lifestyle, it's a discipline involving balancing of Gyan, Yoga, Dharana, Seva. It's a discipline of tyaga, tapasya, seva, you know, renunciation, intense meditation, and then service. It's a discipline of renouncing the fruits of action, which is a technical expression, a meaning that, you know, whatever it is you're doing, you're not doing it for the results. Even though the Brahmin culture is currently very interested in the results. You know, people will say, how many centers do you run? You know, or how many students have you got? Or how many people did you bring to Madhuban? Or how much property do you have? All of these things, which are really quite lokic. And this is how the lokic success is evaluated. So if we import that into our culture, then I think that we have forgotten what the teachings are all about. You see. And we're very fortunate that Dadi Jenki continues to tell us things like, I never consider myself to be a Raja Yoga teacher. She says, I consider myself a Raja Yogi, and she takes the responsibility of what that implies. But she's very, very careful in her own life, and also she speaks about this, to never say I and my for these kinds of things, because all of that puts us back into the Iron Age. All of that takes us into the world of, you know, what it means to be good in the Iron Age. But it's not what the Confluence Age is about. And so I think that Baba expects us to be aware of the contrast. And when we find ourselves in circumstances where people are looking at us and evaluating us under those criteria, we have to find a way to rapidly and immediately respond by providing the criteria that we use, which are not those criteria. You see, because our criteria are more like, you know, are we fulfilling the implications of the meaning of being an instrument? You see? In Lokic, they don't talk about being an instrument. They talk about being a possessor, being, you know, Dadi Prakashmani used to say, you know, it's people are into property, position and paisa. And that's very Lokic. But it's an import, you see. And it becomes fashionable in our discussions or whatever. Very often Baba says, do not gossip. What do family members talk about? Other family members, right? And of course, we love the other family members, but we should not talk about the other family members as if we are in Lokic, talking about Lokic people, because then there's no difference between the Iron Age and us, who are supposed to be in the Confluence Age. And so we need to be able to really have, I think he really expects our third eye to be fully polished so that we can see the invisible things. And the invisible things are people's virtues. They're very, very deeply hidden. But Baba has given every Brahmin at least one of his virtues, and very often a good combination of virtues, which he gives us as seeds, you see. Baba is called the ocean of virtues. He's never called the ocean of values. He doesn't teach values, but he does teach virtues. And all the virtues of Baba, who is the ocean of virtues, these virtues that we receive as seeds, we have to cultivate them and make them into the garden of flowers that Baba wants to see. So I think this is very much something that Baba is waiting for us to emerge. For a long time, Baba has been saying, when will you have no more waste thoughts? And everyone has to create their own criteria for what exactly is a waste thought. And so I like to play with the Hindi language, as you know. And the Hindi word for waste is vyarth. But if you divide that word into two sections, V usually means it negates, it's a negative, and it means what is not. And then Art means meaning. So that then for me becomes quite a good criteria. Am I having a thought that's meaningful? Or is it just meaningless? You know, if I have a thought, I notice a defect of another person, it's actually meaningless, because so what? You know. But the virtues of people, they're very deeply buried and they need to be discerned. And whenever we set our mind to it, we are very capable of discerning the different virtues of people, but we generally don't do it unless it's some sort of BK exercise, you know, for finding out people's virtues. Then we can do it really well, but we don't do it nearly as often as the more iron-aged practice of finding fault. You see, and it's quite well known in, I don't know, in the English culture that even though everybody's really good at finding out anybody's faults, but they still say, you know, we shouldn't find fault. One interesting thing that I found about the mind, not the intellect, the mind doesn't know the difference between yes and no, or do it or don't do it. A little example I give you. Think about a green apple. What do you do? What comes in your mind? Green apple, right? Instantly. Because the mind works by association. If I say to you, don't think about a green apple, you think about a green apple, right? So any type of suggestion that comes to the mind, whether it's don't do it or do it, the mind will do it. Which means to me, there's no point in saying to yourself or anyone else not to do something, because you start thinking about doing it. And so when Baba says we need to think positively, I think that's included in this, that we should try to create a way of talking and way of thinking where we're talking about what we want, not what we don't want. What we like, not what we don't like. What we find meaningful, interesting, purposeful, and not what we don't think is useful or meaningful. Because then our thoughts would not be waste. Because any time we say, you know, if you think about the conventional morality, it's all about, you know, do not kill, do not steal, do not, you know, covet somebody else's property, do not this and do not that, do not be disrespectful. It's lots of do nots. And you look at our whole legal system, that's all full of do not, do not. Can't do this and you can't do that, and if you do that you'll have this punishment and that punishment and the other punishment. So all of that really from this angle goes into the category of waste thoughts. And if you think about it, there's so many times during the day that you're thinking about what's not okay, is it? And so Baba has given us this beautiful knowledge of drama, which is specially designed to enable us not to do that, you see, because anytime anything happens, it's always drama, whether it's okay or not okay, you see. And many times people will use the expression, I can't understand why it's possible for this BK to do that thing, you see. Now that's a really strange statement, because you know exactly why. I see, because every person performs a fixed part in drama. And if you say, I don't know why this person is doing that, you have to take the 7 days course all over again, because it's in there. Why? It's because it's fixed, you see. So, I think what Baba wants us to do is to come into harmony with each other. And I think there's probably about 1 million BKs worldwide, give or take a few. And can you imagine harmonizing with 1 million other people? Very difficult. So Baba puts us into smaller groups, harmonize within a smallish group. Someone who was studying groups at one time said that when you have a group of 40 people, you've got pretty much the full spectrum of opinion. The full political spectrum, the full economic spectrum, all these things. And very often centers will be more or less 40 people, or your Brahmins that you work with, you know, can get up to 40 people. When you're having something with hundreds of thousands of people, you don't work with people individually, but 40 is an interesting number of people that you can really work with together and try to come in harmony with. And bearing in mind that you have the full spectrum in just 40 people, it becomes quite microcosmic. Because what Baba has asked us to do, what he hopes we will do, is make the world into paradise, you see. And sometimes we say, well, you're God, you make the world into paradise. He says, no, I just give you the instructions, but you do it, and I'm with you, but I don't do it for you, because then I would go to paradise, and it's not in my part in drama. Your part in drama is to go to paradise, which you will do by following Srimat, by studying the knowledge, by creating your status, and by becoming the conqueror of matter, the conqueror of Maya, the detached observer, the one who has killed the ego, all of these things, you see, and all that happens and the inside of one soul and body combined. And as soon as you come into connection with other souls, then immediately the jnana starts to be absolutely relevant. And when we study this jnana, I think more deeply, and we need to go more deeply into it, because I think at the moment many of us are satisfied with being a little bit surface. And part of the reason is because it is hard work to go in deep. I've often said this before, but you know, when Dadi Janki asked Brahma Baba how she could catch up with the other sisters and brothers who had come to Baba, because she came about 1 year after the others. And Baba had told her the way to do it is to read every Murli 12 times. You see. And she said, okay, well, I'm going to read every Murli 24 times. But there's a great secret contained within that, because if you would try to read the Murli that many times, you would realize how hard it is to bring all the things of a particular Murli into your mind. Because when you read it once, you skim the surface. As you read it a second time, you notice a few more things. A third time, it's more. By the time you've read it 6, 8, 10 times, you're able to hold all of it. But it really stretches the muscle of your intellect to have to do that, because your intellect is not used to holding this much information together at one time. But this is the way to deepen your appreciation of what this knowledge is. And also, It's only by doing that that you get insights. And when you get an insight into what Baba's telling you, that insight is, in a sense, a peak experience, because it gives you intense happiness when you understand something that you didn't understand before. But as soon as you understand something you didn't understand before, you have grown bigger. Your capacity has been extended. And then you have room to extend it further. So it's a very good muscle-building exercise of the capacity of the intellect to hold knowledge. And Baba talks about the intellect filled with knowledge. If the intellect is not filled with knowledge, then what it's filled with is preconceptions. So another very good exercise to do is to really check the chart and see, to what extent am I operating on the basis of preconceptions? And many people are operating on that basis to a very large extent. And it's only when you start checking it and maybe even discussing it with other people who may have different preconceptions that you start to realize how many preconceptions you have. But jnana means no preconceptions at all. You have conceptions, but not preconceptions. Preconception is that you assume that something is what it's not. And you never bother to find out what it really is. That's preconception. You know. So sometimes Baba uses this word anuman as assumption. Assumptions about people, you know. People will say, sometimes you'll say, okay, anybody who works hard, the only reason they do it because they want my position. That may not be the reason. There may be many other reasons. But if you think that it's like that, that's a preconception. And then you act on the basis of preconceptions, your karma will be false. And your experience of personal progress will be very slow. You will feel that you're just not getting anywhere. And that's simply on the basis of operating from preconceptions rather than really seeing what something is, you know. Sometimes I will say, you know, if you really want to know what I think, you could ask me and I will tell you. I see. Another preconception, well, I know what you're thinking. You don't. You have no clue. You see. But it's a habit. It's not a good habit. It stops us from going into the depth of jnana. It stops us from harmonizing with each other. It stops us from being able to appreciate who Baba is, because he's not a human. So for us to be able to interact with someone who is much higher form of intelligence than us, it is out of our range. But Baba comes to us and makes it possible for it to come into our range, provided we do what he asks us to do. And all of these things are mental activities. So nowadays that Baba is talking to us more and more about service through the mind, and that he has reminded us that all of the subtle regions operates on the basis of the mind, not on the basis of pure thought. So I think the most important dharana and exercise and practice that we need to do is to really be very conscious. What am I thinking? How am I thinking? Why am I thinking like that? Am I thinking in the way that Baba is thinking, not the way I assume Baba probably ought to be thinking, so that it ends up being the same as the way I'm thinking? No, that doesn't work. We really have to bring ourselves up to his level, which we can do by absorbing the Murali and going deep into the Murali, you see. One of the things that we're very aware of is that for most of the period of the Yajna, we are surrounded by seniors who will give us drishti and create the atmosphere and the vibration and actually transfer spiritual energy to us. And this is what happens when somebody is young in life or young in the spiritual practice. But as we grow more mature, then we find that we need to be self-sustaining. And in order to be self-sustaining and keep ourselves very much close to Baba and in connection and relationship with Baba, we also need to have a feel for our responsibility for our peer group, right? Peer group is the people, what Baba says, those who are like yourself. You know, people who've been in Gyan the same amount of time as you, or who are similarly mature in Gyan, or who are having, excuse me, similar similar kind of responsibility, or even similar kind of challenges, you see. And it's very, very important for us to learn how to support each other and also the atmosphere, building of atmosphere. I remember the last Murali of the last season, Baba didn't come. And the feeling was that Baba, you know, said, well, you're not really meditating. You're socializing. And so the atmosphere of invoking Baba isn't really there. So Baba's not coming. And then everybody started meditating a lot. I think we had 24 hours of meditation, and it was so good because everybody, you know, and we were 20,000, 25,000, something, a large number of people, all meditating. You could feel the atmosphere. So I think really this is what Baba wants us to do. I remember in days gone by, we used to sit in meditation before Baba came for 4 hours, and nobody chatted to anybody. That was absolutely out of the question. And so that this very powerful atmosphere was created by the Brahmins sitting. This was when Baba was coming in Om Shanti Bhavan, for example. And Baba would stay a whole night and into the next morning. Very, very powerful atmosphere. And I think what Baba wants from us is that, you know, that we really go into the depth of the knowledge and the depth of what this really is, so that we are inspired through that insight and that inspiration to give a lot of attention to the building of atmosphere through individual and collective meditation. Because when we do that, that is the key to harmonizing amongst each other. Because then everyone is in the confluence age. Everyone is in soul consciousness. Everyone is bringing Baba into the atmosphere. And anyone who is in that atmosphere is immediately transported. I'll give you just a little example. Recently I was in West Africa in the Cameroon. And there I met the regional director for the United Nations UNESCO program. And he said that he had visited the center in Nairobi. And in Nairobi there's a meditation room on every floor, and on the main floor there's about 4 or 5 meditation rooms, and everybody is actually doing a lot of meditation there. Amrit Vela is always at 3 a.m., not 4 a.m. Everybody does it at 3 a.m. And he said, I felt the atmosphere in the center, and because of that atmosphere, I declare myself a BK. So somebody very high caliber who will publicly make a statement like that in office, to other United Nations colleagues, is a testimony to the impact of atmosphere. And I think that this is also a very important thing that Baba wants for us. He wants us to get on with creating the atmosphere, because the atmosphere forms the ground or the territory in which Baba can act, you see. Because we're all tuned to him, and then if he wants to get something done, he just has to put out a thought and it'll be amplified by all of us. It'll go into the atmosphere and it will become a reality. And this is how I think he wants us to help him, by really being real and true ourselves, and also by being good conduits and atmosphere creators, so that he can get his work done quickly. So, thank you very much. Om.